Thank you.
Okay, you're up.
All right, this is Nederland Fire Protection District Board of Directors meeting. It is March 4, 2020. Your roll call, Ray Willis.
Present.
Beth Davis.
Here.
Joe Evans. You heard from Joe?
I have.
Right, not here. Nicholas Brodsky.
I'm here.
Zerbrick's here. Chief Durer.
Here.
All right, we have four directors out of five present. We have a quorum, calling the meeting to order at 19:01. Motion to approve the agenda for tonight.
So moved.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, agenda is moved. Ian Irvin Powell and Kayla Evans signed up for public comment. Mm-hmm. So it's all yours, Ian.
Okay. Ian Irvin Powell, 40 Pome Way, Lovely Colorado, 2466. So a couple of things for you. Some follow-up on the last board meeting. First of all, I'd like to apologize, Henry, for my email silence. I wasn't ignoring you. It just got buried in a whole ton of other work. I've been on jury duty all week, which has just bogged me down. As for progress, so far we have more SOGs than trainings. I think that's the correct order, so we can tailor trainings to SOGs. This morning I looked, and there's about 10 SOGs in progress, and two trainings, which take much longer and a lot more effort to produce. I'm happy to share the work in progress, and I shared with Chief a diagram of the kind of flow right. that we envisioned for that, and I can show you that too.
I got a view of the Dropbox, so okay. I know what you guys are working on, and that's encouraging.
Cool. So it's coming along. Like you rightly said, it's more complicated than mm-hmm. perhaps we'd like. It's going to take more time than we'd like. You know, people have jobs and lives and other things. But what I'm seeing so far is pretty good.
Okay.
The team's identified a number of SOGs they want to hit, and they've started working on them.
I'll have a couple follow-up questions for you, and they're probably under old and continuous business.
Okay.
But that's a good, I mean, I think it's a good start.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to say about the communication, I think it's been a bit fragmented on both sides. And maybe we need to set aside some time, make a date, so we all get together and just chat, just so to make sure we're staying on the same page. Obviously, I'm busy, you're busy. Email can be incredibly inefficient sometimes. Can we go back to old business? I re-listened to the last board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of comments and rebuttals from there. So the use of the word noise in the last board meeting regarding genuine concerns really created friction in the membership. I got a huge amount of feedback about that. There was a genuine fear of retaliation for talking directly to a board member, which we've discussed. But really,
wait. I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. There was a fear from the members about talking to the board members?
Yep. Because we have been led to believe over time that going directly to the board is not allowed. It's my understanding that the staff have the belief that they will be fired if they go directly to the board. A number of them have told me that individually.
Okay.
I'd just like to say that from what I heard you were told, you should never just brush it off as noise. It was offensive and disrespectful to the person who did that. And you've not spoken to them since, which I think is spectacularly rude and disrespectful as well. And while we're on the subject of disrespect, I've listened to some of last year's board meetings, and I was horrified on some of the stuff that I heard in those board meetings. If you want me to be specific, September's board meeting, concerns of officers in this department were brushed off There was no follow-up. And if you need a refresher of how disrespectful that meeting was, you can go back and listen from 35 minutes and 22 seconds. Like I said, I was appalled that this board behaved in that manner towards the members of this department. It was shocking. And I'd also like to point out that almost every member of this department has heard that discussion now. So that would explain why they really have a low level of trust in the board and the chief at this time.
That was September's board meeting?
September's board meeting, you were not present. But I believe you should listen to that. Henry, I was happy that the complaint that was forwarded to you was, I think, dealt with appropriately. I hope you learned something from the outreach to the people who responded to you. Mm-hmm. There was a comment made that it went in the wrong direction, that it should have gone first to the person who was involved and then to the board. I will tell you the reason it was not sorted directly with the chief is that no one has any faith in trying to resolve matters directly with him. In the past, that has basically led to the complaint being ignored. I refer you to talk to the shift officers freely and without fear of retaliation about events that they have taken to the chief to resolve issues they have had that have had far from suitable reactions and no resolutions. I know the details because I've spoken to them about them, but technically me telling you is hearsay. I'd rather you hear it firsthand from them. And I am happy for them and for you to sit in as an independent witness to that conversation to all parties. I wanted to just follow up on a couple of items, please, if I can. You can tell me if you want to push these into old business. I missed this in the meeting. I was concentrating on other things. But the radios grant seemed a little bit excessive. On one hand, you're saying, we have no money. And on the other hand, you're saying, but we'll burn $28,000 or $27,500 on a grant for 20 mobile heads and 20 portable radios for 800s, which, having re-listened, I believe they're dual band, so I can understand some of the need. Boulder County, as far as I'm aware, has no plans to go all 800. It sounds like this is being driven by Gilpin. And the only real reason for us to go 800 would be for mutual aid for them. So I would question whether you really need 20 mobile heads. The portables I could probably roll with. But, you know, mobile heads are, what, $6,000 each? Portables are $5,000, somewhere in that range.
The money's roughly the same for both.
Okay,
but yes.
But in that area. You know, we have, allegedly, according to the insurance, 27 active vehicles. I couldn't even count the hours that probably 20 of those have done since the Cold Springs fire. They've probably just been sat doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So I would question the motives for putting new radio heads in there very strongly as a taxpayer when you're complaining that you don't have enough money for training and proper PPE. And you would then also open up the problem of then having another radio head potentially in a vehicle that you have to reprogram every time Boulder County changes its mind about where they want everything assigned in channels. I was actually unclear, even after listening to the recording again, what the grant match actually was. My understanding was it's around about 27,000.
I think it was a 50% match or something like that.
So I think it was 10%.
So it's going to be a... I shouldn't say that. If population served is under 10,000, it's a 5% match. The current request is 230,000 plus install at about 400 per mobile. Okay. So if you want to call it 250,000. And so 5%, and if population serves between 10 and 20,000, then it's 10%.
Okay.
Do you want me to address any of your points as you talk, or do you want to save that for later?
Let's address it in old business so that Kayla, who also signed up on a public comment, has a chance to...
Yeah, all the rest of this is old business, and we can discuss it.
Okay.
I can cede the floor to Kayla.
Kayla Evans.
Thank you.
You're up.
The Fieldora Road is... You have to do it. Thank you for allowing me to come for this board. About a month ago, I was approached by Henry to possibly go up for election to be on this board. And I asked him, why me? And he said they wanted Evans on the board, which I thought was kind of interesting because obviously the Evans that's on the board doesn't participate in your board meetings. He should have been recused or he should have been removed from your board a long time ago. And this is really difficult for me. I decided not to run based on the fact that I have a lot of friends on this board and I want to keep them as my friends. They are more important to me than running for this board. But I also felt that I had, as a person in this community, as someone who has sat on a lot of boards, a personal fiduciary responsibility to my community to come and speak to what has come at me since Henry asked me to be on the board. I have spoken to multiple people on your board, and there are a lot of conflicting opinions going around. I don't know if everybody is aware of them or not, or if you are. I read, Rick sent me your handbook. I read the whole frickin' thing, and I took a lot of notes, and I have, if I may be so indulged, as to some questions that would help maybe answer some of my questions, but also clarify things for you all, because I think this fire department is magnificent and fucked up. It's really amazing. There are the most extraordinary people that work on this fire department, and you're fucked up. And I don't know, it's not my job to fix it. It's not even really my job to point this out to you, but everybody in this room is either a friend or an acquaintance or respects everyone else that's in this room. But things are not working. You're not working correctly as a board. As a board, I don't think you're working correctly. I don't think you're doing your fiduciary responsibility. The fact that you haven't kicked my brother, and I love my brother, but that you haven't asked him to resign off this board, being a convicted felon, and the fact that he never shows up is ridiculous. You are needing five people on your board that show up and contribute, because this fire department, from everything I've read and taken notes on, starts with the board. The next one down is your chief. And then everything puddles out from the chief down. And the way I read that is that there is responsibility that if it works right, it's wonderful. If it doesn't work, it's a cluster poop. And you have some cluster poop stuff happening. Part of it is, it sounds like, from the feedback I have gotten from people in this community, firefighters, board members, whatever, you're not respecting one another and talking. There's very little transparency and there's very little accountability. And I think that gets dangerous when the bottom line is lives are at stake. And if you guys hadn't been as good as you are, my friend Bay would not be alive today. It is imperative that this board throw your personalities out. You have to start looking at this as, how do we run more efficiently? How do we run the best we can to service the people in this community when property and lives are at stake? And I think that there are things that are happening, and there's noise happening, and stuff is getting in the way of you all doing your jobs the best you can. Your handbook, you haven't written another handbook or revived it since 2014. Do you know how much shit has happened since 2014 that should make that obsolete? Why is that not happening? As a community member, I want to know why this is not being updated. Why is there not a... I couldn't find anything in this book that really allowed for community people or within your own department to have a paper trail to say, hey, I have a grievance. This is my grievance. How soon is this going to be taken care of? Can it be taken? You don't run efficiently. There are vehicles that... And I am not pointing fingers because I want to walk out of this room with the same relationship I had coming into this room. Because I love you guys. But you're acting like you're not as professional as you need to be. And you are... When you do that, you put not only lives and property in peril, but you're good people. You know, this is... The noise is getting in the way to be running as efficiently as you should be. And I don't want to be telling you, I mean, you have no reason, you're listening to me, but is anybody hearing me? And I say this from the bottom of my heart because I do care. I care so much that I said, I can't run on, I can't be on this board. I don't want to even put myself up for a run on this board because I think I would have to take sides, and I don't want to do that. But I also couldn't sit home and watch Chicago Law, Chicago Fire, Chicago LA tonight and not worry about my own fire department. Because I tell you what, 99% of the people in this community don't know that there's a problem in this fire department. And that's okay, but it's also kind of scary. So the thing I would say to you is, if people have grievances, there has to be a procedure where you can express them in a way that you are not afraid of losing your job. And this board needs to get their... Pardon me, you have four members on this board. Five. One shouldn't be on this board, and I do love my brother, but he's a total fuck-up. Pardon my French. And I know this is being recorded, so sorry, Joe. By law, he should be not on this board. So you have four members on this board, which means you needed an alternate to come on the board until you have an election. That's not professional, and that's not the way you should do it, and it's not the good old boys club where you just hand out license plates to anybody who you like that's on the fire board. You came to a meeting? Oh, you want fire board license plates? Great, here you go. You have a vehicle that doesn't have a windshield that's not repaired in a year and a half? What the heck? What is that? And I love your mechanic, but are the people that are doing the jobs for your fire department the best people to be doing them? Or are you just doing it because you've always done it that way, and you're good old boys, and you're friends, and you don't want to hurt your friends, and that's not how you run a fire department in a municipality where people's property and lives are at stake. So, I mean, I'm going to sit here and listen to the rest of this board meeting because it's open to the public. But I wrote down 10 million things, and they all seem sort of like it really boils down to your board needs to be more efficient. They need to do their job more fiduciarily with the community safety and property in mind and not, well, we've always done it this way, or I like being on the board, or it's fun, or when Harry, you know, and Henry said, you know, I said, what's required? He said, well, you only have to come to one board meeting a month for a couple hours. He didn't say, well, you need to read this, you need to follow up, you need to get familiar. You should have done that, Henry, because I love you, but you're not telling me all the things that I needed to do to be an efficient member of this board.
True.
And
I think that's fair.
I'm not spanking you, but I'm giving you a love pat. So, your handbook is inefficient. You don't have ways of... If you are the head dude and everybody else underneath you is unhappy, you got to ask them why. And if the guys underneath you are unhappy to have a real grievance, there has to be procedurally a way for you to be able to voice those unhappy feelings. And Rick, goddammit, you've done so many good things for this community, but you need to earn your job here. and you need to keep your job here because the community loves you. But you got to tighten your belt, and you got to step up and do some of the shit that's not being done by the people that support you, because you are a good guy, and people in this community love and respect you. But there are things that are falling through the cracks in this fire department, and I guess that's about it. So I apologize if I offended anyone, because I do want to walk out of this room with still being friends with all of you. And my hope is that what I said will make you all take a second look and make this the incredible fire department that everybody thinks we have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for that. I think the points are the points are fair. The only thing I would want to add to that is that it's not easy if we sit here for 10 years and nobody ever shows up and nobody ever comes to a meeting with an issue. And then 2 months ago, two and a half board meetings ago, these issues surface, right? And it's easy to understand, but it's also somewhat difficult that all of a sudden, after 10 years, now we got this big cluster, right? And so I think we as the board and the fire chief, and together with Ian and some other members, I think we have discussed a path forward to figure these things out, to discuss these things openly, more in this format and in this platform. And I think there is a way forward, and I think there have, you know, per Ian as well, and I've seen that too, looking in from the outside. I mean, there has been progress on some of these things. And yeah, if there is issues amongst the membership that needs to be addressed on the board level, then that's what we do. But they need to come to the board. These issues need to be addressed. And I think they're being addressed, right? And so I think the board is grappling with that, trying to figure out what's really, like, is it broken, what's broken, how far is it broken. And together with the chief, I think we're taking that in consideration, and we're trying to implement some of these things.
Well, all of these things came from my conversation that happened a week to 2 weeks ago. So if that is happening, in the words of Emily Latella, all I can say is, never mind.
No. It's okay to hear. It's okay to understand. My wish was that if issues came up and if there was frustration amongst the membership, that these things would have been addressed in a timely manner, not bottle up for 10 years. Or I didn't even know, maybe it was good for 9 years and then all of a sudden in the last year we start screwing things up. I kind of doubt that would be the case, but it would have been helpful to understand these things as we are going along.
Right.
But we know it. We understand that. I think we hear it pretty loud and clear. So we, you know, there's a path forward in addressing these.
Thank you.
All right. No more other public comments. Review acceptance of previous meeting minutes. And Jim made a couple more revisions this afternoon that I asked him to, not on actual text, but just formatting. And I reviewed the context, I reviewed the numbers on it. Seems to follow our context at the board meeting. Ray, Beth, and Nick, do you have any comments to those?
No, everything seemed to be the way I remembered it.
Yeah, I gave a couple of comments when I first got them.
Yep.
To Jim.
Yep. So, if there's no other debate on the meeting minutes on the board level, ready to motion to move the minutes as written?
So moved.
Beth, do you have any comments? I'm sorry, I didn't ask you.
No, I'm good.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Jim, your meeting minutes have been approved. Treasurer's report.
Is it
February 29th, 2020, in savings, $214,729.32. Checking, $16,640.97. Capital reserve, $24,670.23. Total funds, $256,040.52. In capital reserve, $24,667.10. We have a grant match reserve of $25,000. Reserve for payroll and operating expenses of $106,902.33. Reserve for sick and vacation, $79,196.57. We have a reserve for water systems of $46,902.83. We have a Tabor reserve of $29,760. Reserve for wildland fire reimbursement, $317.67, for total reserves, $312,746.50. We have expensed and not paid Visa, $341.08, payroll taxes, $9,154.82, pension disability, $7,661.52, AFLAC, $440.99, cafeteria, $670.76, for a total of $18,273.17. We have a total unreserved funds of a negative $74,979.15. Sure, I need to clarify that.
Thank you, Nicholas. Quick look back, a year ago, same time, total funds a year ago were $192,961 versus $256,000, so we improved upon that. The big difference on this number here is our total reserve. We had a year ago, we had $213,370 reserved. We upped that to $312,000, and part of that, we increased our reserve for payroll and operating. Again, that being a function of the real estate income, tax income that we're going to gain. So we have that $106,000 in reserve for payroll operating. For those who haven't been here before, the fire department does not collect real estate income taxes till March. So from about November till March, there is zero income.
We get SOT, so we get
small percentages of that. So we are, in essence, we are reserving, we're putting from our general funds, we're putting a certain amount of money into reserve funds to pay for operating costs in those months that we don't have an income. And on the unreserved, total unreserved funds, last year that was $30,795 versus the $74,975. Again, this being a function of, I think we increased our payroll and operating expense reserve.
Yes, and so functionally, the end of year, we're about $50,000 in the black, and reserve for payroll and operating was at $56,000, and so all of the revenue stream from 19 got rolled into operating reserve.
Yep. On the check register, I figured it out. We wrote East Street Garage a check, and that was for maintenance of one of the...
Probably 5621.
5621, yeah, the ambulance. Do you remember what that was?
Which time?
Glow plugs
the first time.
And the shifter.
And the glow plug wiring harness the second time, and then the shifter and the ambulance inspection.
Okay. On the balance sheet, I have no questions.
Can I just clarify something? Is the ambulance inspection for licensing or for
there's nothing else that's worth reviewing. The one thing that I noticed, and I talked to Kathy about that. Kathy's our bookkeeper. Between the actual February income and expense and the year-to-date income and expense, apparently there is, I knew that there's a time difference on when we post thing. So in the February income and expense, January for February, the actual. So there's a health insurance amount posted of $12,643, but in the actual full year actual to-date budget, that number is $18,697, and I asked her why that is, and it's literally she pays March premium on March 1st, and it actually gets booked into the system. So technically, we're almost paying ahead of the month. So the March premium got booked in the year to date, even though we're kind of reviewing the January for February statements. That number, because it's a March 1st, and it happens right after she closes the actual month and our board meeting. So that number gets booked, and it just shows up. If we had our board meetings at the first of the month, then there wouldn't be no discrepancy. But there's a couple numbers in here that are like that, and it's literally a timing issue between end of the month and our board meeting. I have nothing
else. The tax revenue is much shorter than we were budgeting. Is that just a timing issue?
Yep. I asked her that. I mean, she doesn't have an answer to that, but it's got to be a timing issue, just the way Boulder distributes that.
So functionally, Nicholas, we typically take 3 years of income by month, average that 4 months, and project that projection on the future year.
Oh, okay.
But that's really nothing that dictates when people pay their taxes.
Right. Budgeted versus actual expenses, overall payroll, we did good. We spent $47,900. We had budgeted $51,500, so we're under a budgeted amount on that. Spent some money on maintenance. Nothing else. Any other discussion about the treasurer's report?
I've got a question on, you brought it up, the timing. So I've had the opportunity to review the 2019 credit card bills and the 2019 financials as presented to the board, and there's a massive discrepancy every month between what the board sees on the credit card and the check that's cut and the statement. So the statement and the check both match. What the board sees, completely different numbers. What I don't ever see in the financials that the board sees is any kind of ongoing history of what the actual credit card bill was. So it's a long way of asking the question of how much scrutiny does the board place on the department's credit cards on a monthly basis.
You mean what the actual amounts, like what the amount on the credit card actually consists of?
Mm-hmm. Well, what it consists of and what the true value is, say, the previous months. Because what you see from my calculation is you see the number from maybe 2 days ago. The credit card normally closes out anywhere, depending on where this meeting drops, between two days to a week and a half.
Right. I mean, I see the amounts in the check register that are being paid to the credit card company.
Okay.
And then I see the amounts due or expense but not paid yet in our statement, in our fund balance worksheet.
So the one in the fund balance worksheet is just fiction.
Hmm?
The one in the fund balance worksheet is fiction.
Yeah, it's just the amount that's not been paid yet. That's expense but not paid yet.
Yeah, but you have no history of what's going on the card.
So when the check is cut by the bookkeeper, the current Citibank bill is attached with all the receipts. Mm-hmm. And so the board co-signs each of those checks.
Okay. I mean, when I sign checks, I actually look at this. Like, I don't look at every receipt that I'm, reviewing, but I go through those and, figure some, find some stuff.
Yeah. So then just as a follow-up question on that, in last year's credit card, I'd like to open a query and ask the board, and you can come back to me on this one, whether you think it's appropriate that there's $3,663.85 in food and beverage billing over the year. A lot of them are in the small amount range of $20 to $30. look at the year, they add up. And again, we're talking about we have no money, so what's that? What's that all about?
So, Ian, I'll answer that directly.
Go.
So, a portion of that is the Meals for Wildland Refresher, and that's about $300 to $400 annually. And the rest of it is me buying breakfast and lunch, talking fire department stuff with staff.
Yeah. I would query whether that's an acceptable use of taxpayer funds. Generally speaking, in a fire department, firefighters buy their own food. You can have a chat over your own coffee with your own food.
If we're
struggling, so you've got a shift captain or shift officer who has structure pants that don't fit, and he's been here nearly a year and a half.
So I don't know who that is. Okay, so that didn't come to me. But what I know is that, hey, chief, can we take the crew out for lunch after Saturday training? And the answer to the shift officer is yes. And that's where that line item goes.
That doesn't really answer all the costs that I see.
Yes, absolutely. There's $25 to $40 a lot of times when we're talking fire department business to kind of facilitate that. And that's volunteer and career staff. However, you can, again, the board can dictate whether that's justifiable or not.
Yeah. I think it's questionable business. I'd like to make that clear. When you're saying we don't have money for things.
I mean, I probably would disagree with you on that item. I think it's like buying a meal every once in a while for people that are volunteering and, you know, that sacrificing time. I think it's probably a reasonable investment. You know, we don't need to do it every Saturday. We don't need to do it every week. But I think, you know, showing the department's appreciation and buying a meal, I think that's not a bad thing.
There are situations that I would agree with. It's just the frequency. I also question the food that is bought in Boulder, food that's bought in Centennial. There are some charges that are highly questionable in that area. That I think need a little bit more oversight, probably a little bit more investigation and explanation that is not present in the credit card bill that I saw. I've seen.
So then again, as example, paramedic refresher with Rick Hendrickson and George Newell on Saturday, or whatever day that was, yes, I took them to Deli Zone in Gun Barrel. And if I'm buying meals in Centennial, it's because I'm not here because I'm delivering a truck with somebody for something.
But if you're here, you buy your own lunch.
Yes. If Rick Durr's on his own time, Rick takes care of his own lunch or goes home.
Okay.
The exception. I'm sorry. There is an exception. When I sit at my desk from 8 to 5 and I'm on a conference call or I can't leave, I will ask Jim, go get me a sandwich. Mm-hmm. When I can't leave my desk.
I personally have no issues with that. I mean, I understand it's money we're spending. I think that is money spent okay, in my opinion. I mean, of course, we're not, I don't think the fire department's going to allow for the chief to go to Morton Steakhouse. Right. But, I mean, I think if within reason, the frequency, where we're going, I think it's not a bad thing. We can agree to disagree.
We can agree to disagree. I think you need to have a look at some of those charges.
It's not unreasonable to ask for more monitoring of it. You know, I think a lot of these discussions that hopefully you've been having are about moving forward in a positive way instead of about kind of regurgitating, or that's not the right word, but instead of fighting everyone's back, it's brought to our attention, and so we can discuss it. If it's a problem, we can put some sort of, I don't know if limits are the right word, but more oversight on it, I think is what is being requested.
Yes. So, nodding my head, doesn't work for the record.
Hey, can I just make a comment on this whole thing? What I hear Chief Durr say, time after time, when an issue is brought up, is that no one has spoken with him about it. But now he's telling me that at least twice a week, if you do the math and average out this, he's taking a staff member or a volunteer out for a meal and having a discussion. What the hell are they talking about?
Are you asking us to find out what they're talking about?
I'm just saying that I agree with Ian that some of these expenditures are questionable.
So in this particular case, as related to the gentleman sitting next to you, so Charlie, what do you think about the city of Boulder's brush truck? Charlie, what do you think about we move the stuff off of 5623? We keep it, we get rid of it, we re-chassis it. What do you think about the maintenance issues? So those are the kinds of things that we routinely talk about. Hey, Dan, let's talk about the online application for vehicle checkoffs. And so we spend the meal typically talking about stuff and issues that are here. And in the discussion that I am not accessible, but ironically have meals with almost all of my shift officers throughout the week and any volunteers that are present when it becomes lunchtime, I'm pretty darn available, and I would contend the receipts show that because I'm buying lunches for a lot of people in this room, or the district taxpayer is, and I'm present and authorizing it. And so we're not talking hockey, and we're not talking whatever else it is. We're talking district business. So that's what we're talking about. The issues and the way to grow the department and the right things, and me trying to develop consensus and using the people that I lunch or breakfast with as a sounding board for ideas.
When was the last time you had lunch with Charlie?
Charlie's here, ask him.
What you guys talk about?
I remember the last lunch, mostly.
What you guys talk about?
Well, the last conversation we had was with about 23, but that was not over lunch.
Okay.
I'm not taking a side here one way or another, but I mean, I understand the questions.
All right, well, Ian, Your comment is noted. You're wanting more clarity on how the district is spending lunch money. So, well,
I'd like clarity on the district spending my tax dollars.
Right. Okay.
In federal government, that would probably not fly. Just
and I'm sure we probably can go to City of Boulder Fire Department, Boulder County Fire Department. They have a similar line item in their budget, and they're using it at their discretion as well. So, but your comments noted. Anything else on the treasurer's report yet?
No.
Beth? You okay?
She's taking a shower.
Thank you. Chief's report?
59 calls here to date of significance. There was a CPR call where the family members drove the victim back to the police station and actually ran into the building. Dan and whatever the crew that was with him did a good job. They got pulses back. They worked tirelessly for approximately 40 minutes, is my understanding. The patient got transferred to the hospital, went to the cath lab, but ultimately didn't survive. I got very positive discussion from Ned PD about the efforts of the crews that were there. But more importantly, I got really positive feedback from the shop owner that Ned Fire went into her place of business and picked all the stuff up off the wall where it got knocked off the wall, and they cleaned up stuff. And she was just astonished by that. And so kudos for both of those. We also had a code black. We had a minor structure fire at my old residence. That was out on arrival, but could have been a big deal. And then we also did a morbidity mortality follow-up on the CPR that we had on at Eldora last month. Spent a lot of time on the COVID-19 outbreak, and that included a conference call with various people from the state. We have ordered masks, gowns, goggles. The state of Colorado has given us a temporary practice extension to allow us to do swabbing, although no one has asked for us to do that yet. They are working on a dispatcher algorithm to determine if the patient is likely at risk for COVID-19 when we're responding. Ship captains and I are working on the ambulance decon procedure. I have an upcoming conference call with Office of Emergency Management working on a continuity of operations plan in the event that our responders become exposed and are forced into quarantine, how we will continue to respond.
So are we responsible to pay for these masks and gowns and goggles?
Yep. Part of our business now, the national response stockpile locally, they've been authorized to release masks out of that, but the problem is that most of them are expired and out of date by 5 years. I think today the number was 300 and some thousand masks in the stockpile, but what they said is that everybody asked for them, they've got 4 days worth. And so Ryan was on the conference call again also today. The bigger question that he raised is if we have a potential exposure, and really that means that we contact a patient without all the PPE in place, I'm working through when we get contacted that the patient is COVID-19 positive or negative, but there's the potential that we have to 3-day quarantine our responder, and then there's some workers' comp implications with that. And I'm working with AMR, and they're talking about potentially having an ambulance reserved just for that. And they're in the middle of how do we decon after likely calls, every call, whatever call. So we're in the same boat. I'm currently looking at a UV light sterilizer. I doubt that I'll be able to buy one because everybody in the world is buying them, but and that thing's like $500 as opposed to I think $18,000 for a misting decontamination system, which they're pushing on AMR. So anyhow, I'm actively working with them, and then I just sent out the latest state guidelines to membership about 15 minutes ago, and the emphasis there is that we will limit the amount of responder contact, get them to put on a mask prior to us making contact with them if we can.
But you're assuming that we know that these people have that virus?
So it's going to depend on what we're dispatched to. So a standard chest pain is not going to be a COVID-19, but a sick person or a respiratory illness person, we're going to go through a ton and then generate a ton of biohazard along with that.
If I could just make a comment, Rick.
Yeah.
For your respiratory therapist here.
Yep.
People need to keep in mind that something like over 14,000 people have died of flu A and flu B in this country since the flu season started in November. So bottom line is, people die of the flu all season long. They're going to die of the COVID as well. And bottom line, if you're dealing with a patient who is coughing or has any kind of respiratory stuff, put a mask on.
Yep.
But it doesn't matter if they've got COVID or if they've got the flu. You can get it. So just protect yourself.
So we're working on that.
It's just like you're always wearing gloves because you just assume everyone has Hep B.
Okay. So anyhow, lots of effort on that and lots of ongoing effort in conference calls and talking to OEM and different. Pat brought up some issues at the last board meeting, specifically our regulator flow test, and so Vanola has been assigned, and our regulator flow test is scheduled for March 23rd and 24th, and Dan has contacted Black Hawk Fire to get their fit test equipment, and we looked at what certification is required to be a fit test tester, And there is no certification required, and so we believe that, that we will be able to at least get him trained to that level. There may be an option that the guy coming from the company that sold us the SCBAs, they may also be able to do fit tests, but anyhow, both of those are on track, and are, we're working on getting that done. As far as grants, we submitted the state EMS grant for two LifePak 15s. We concurrently had some significant LifePak 12 battery problems, and I was able to find a third-party reseller in Denver, picked up four additional batteries. They will also do the LifePak 12 biomedical inspections, and so that has eased my concern about sitting on those for a year. So anyhow, we've got batteries. They've got oodles and oodles of these LP12s, and I think we're okay on batteries. The Assistance to Firefighter grant is due the 13th of March. Ian, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you talked about as far as the fiduciary responsibility on the radio grant. But I'm going to come back to that in just a second. So right now, Timberline is taking the lead on that. So for 20 portables dual band and 20 mobile single bands, it's 230 plus install. Again, we're going to have a 5% match on that. We went back and we talked to them about potentially converting those to tri-band radios to interface with Eldora and schools so that we get to a single pack set. Mm-hmm. The problem is that they don't interface with Moto Turbo, which is Motorola's proprietary digital thing. So long story short, I can't do a tri-band. Ian, to your point on do we really need all the mobile 800s? The reason that VHF is remaining in Boulder County is because the Forest Service is staying on VHF analog. There is a thought that they will be going to P25, which is a digital VHF at some point.
And that's different 800.
Huh?
And that's different 800.
Correct.
Awesome.
However, they are significantly developing the 800 infrastructure within Boulder County, continue to develop more plans. And as example, if we took trucks down, that's not really true. Many of the Central Boulder fire departments are using 800 daily. They state that they will go to VHF if it's a large-scale incident. Gilpin is absolutely driving 800, and I got their letter of authorizations today. They have a new director that is Scott Whitehead, and he was moved to the director position with Boulder County Sheriff's Department Communications Division. The goal, I think, for Boulder County is to continue to migrate towards 800 infrastructure, but still have to support VHF until the feds do something different. And quote, that's coming. The point that you made, though, is important. Because the old mobile radios that we have in all of the trucks are not P25 digital compliant. And I'm going to follow up with Scott tomorrow before we submit the grant to see if these shouldn't be dual bands, because the VHFs that we're using won't support the digital VHF. And I know that that's a thing for Whitehead, a direction he wants to head. Okay? In answer to your question, could we live without 800 mobiles? Probably. But what I don't want to do is pass up this opportunity where we think regionally it will get awarded at 5%, and we find out later we should have asked for them. I mean, we're running on 20-year-old mobile technology. And so there is some additional capacity in those, and if P25 is the direction for VHF for Boulder County, and I believe it is, then this probably should be dual band mobiles. So that's that piece.
A dual band, you mean 8?
VHF, P25 compliant. It'll be analog and digital compliant.
Okay.
Okay. Ryan has got lead on the Lucas CPR device. That's also due March 13th. We have six Boulder County agencies. Five. Does that include us?
No.
Okay. Five in addition to us. We're probably going to look at two of those devices, one for each of our primary transport ambulances. So that's about $1,500 for us that it would cost us. And then the closeout for the 17 AFG inspector grant is due also. So that's where we currently sit on grants. I went down and picked up the new lights for Station 1. It's going to take some effort to get them installed. I have nothing to report on Station 2 and 3. As far as training, Larissa has gotten into the One Beacon Fire Rescue, taken the EVOC courses. Positive feedback from her on the course material that she took. The shift officers have each been briefed on how to get into the system, look at the videos, and the ability to assign courses to different people. We haven't assigned any courses. Larissa says that she's going to try and take a course a week. But long story short, we haven't done any assignments to any of the other members. So right now, it's just her and one rookie that are currently taking the online training.
And you can track all that online under there's a platform that tracks all that.
That's correct.
Taking these and
watching. And it gives them certificates of completion at the end, and then that goes to Jim. And so it's a pretty robust, although not incredibly easy system, but it tracks all that, and it's pretty cool. And there's specific tracks. So there's a Firefighter 1 track, and a Fire 2, and a Fire Instructor, and an Officer track, and all those things. And so we can assign those courses with due dates.
So are they, and then they're going to be tested online as well, or they
correct.
Just watch it, read it, and not on? There's a test.
I think there's a test. I think that's how they get the certificate.
Okay.
That's how Shiglift, correct? Something.
You take the online course and then you take an online little quiz and then you get a certificate of completion if you pass it.
All right. Good.
I also wrote the DFPC fire prevention for firefighter safety grant.
Yeah, and Ryan wrote one for hoods.
$5,000, no match, two hoods for each person, which according to our current roster, we have 31 firefighters, so 62 hoods. The current standard is every firefighter should have two complete sets of PPE, so you have one set as backup for when you get your first set dirty, trying to prevent cross-contamination from cancer. So this grant was very limited. All I could write for was hoods.
And the difference is that the new hoods have essentially a Crosstech or Gore-Tex barrier inside, and so it's supposed to prevent the migration of particulate stuff. And so that's really the big new cancer reduction effort within the fire service.
How old are our newest gear?
How old is
how old are
so our newest stuff is last year.
No, well, we don't know. It's like 7 years. It's it's been that long since.
Hoods or gear?
Gear. With hoods. We haven't bought any new hoods since we got all that new gear.
So we got 35 or 40 hoods from City of Boulder Fire, but no particulate hoods.
Those are used hoods.
Right. Are you talking bunker gear?
Yeah, bunker gear. Didn't we? I know we had it. We got a grant.
13,
we replaced a whole
grant.
Bunch of it.
Yeah, that was
recently. Like
that was, believe it or not, 7 years ago.
But so that was 13. Yeah. But then we also picked up some additional sets.
That was not hoods. That was just sizing sets of pants and jackets.
Okay.
How long is bunker gear good for?
At 10 years, you're supposed to convert your primary gear into training gear.
And we don't have training gear right now.
5 years.
That's correct. Majority don't.
So then what I'm hearing is that probably in the next year or two, we have to write another grant for additional bunker gear.
I think it's actually opposite. It's 5 years for frontline, and then it can be converted to training gear. It's a very short cycle because NFPA writes these standards. So it's a lot shorter than you think.
But here again, and we're going to get to this on vehicle maintenance, but this is the essential. Netherland Fire with 5 to 10 structure fires and maybe somebody that's very active in academy or maybe somebody that never goes to academy versus Boulder Fire versus a large metropolitan department. And so their standard that we retire primary bunker gear at 5 years with extraordinarily limited use, and if we're doing the right things with the extractor, et cetera, we may not be able to meet that standard at that interval.
So does the gear expire as a function of time or a function of usage?
Well, they put a year, you can't track how many times you've worn it, so they put a 5-year shelf, a 5-year usage life.
And they're assuming a certain amount of usage for them, which we probably don't.
That's correct.
You know.
Yeah, who's they?
It's just they put
NFPA.
Say that again, Ryan.
They don't put a usage meter on it. They just say X.
5 years converted to training. And
same with SCBAs, same with pretty much everything.
Right. Which they're not taking in consideration a department like ours, who is limited in funding and limited in usage of these.
And the PA, a lot of their standards are based on huge municipalities.
All right, moving on. So that's EVSC. Schmidtman and Vanola are in their instructor one. Durin Henderson finished up some EMT paramedic refresher stuff. Shift captains have done national registry EMT testing for a bunch of people, and so they're doing a good job at that. I know that Luna and Hill and Larissa are all working rookie books.
Carpenter,
Jamie? Okay. We have some pending CPR classes for Netherlands Police Department, and we're going to do some skill scenarios with them. So I think that's all going pretty well. My impression of, I ended up teaching a lot in January, and maybe that trailed into February. But my understanding is the last Saturday was car fire scenario. Ryan, you had Thursday. My understanding is that went pretty well. Training calendar, to my understanding, is working fine. Officers are getting more time to prep for that.
Who's in charge of the training calendar?
Charlie helped develop it. We haven't specifically assigned it to anyone. Larissa's done a bunch of work on it on Google. And so I don't have anyone dedicated to the calendar at this point, but Charlie's kind of the tip of the spear on that. So, as far as recruitment and retention, we've got two new applicants. One of them works for AMR, is in paramedic school, and lives in town. And she has previously applied, and then when she got to paramedic school, she backed out. I have realistic expectations of her level of contribution while she's in school, but I'm happy to have her. And then we also got a new applicant today. It's a former 4-mile firefighter and mitigation crew member with a bunch of solid skill set. And so those two should be on board pretty rapidly. So I'm pretty excited about that.
So they're applicants, and they're going to go through membership training just like everybody else?
Correct.
And through testing and whatever we do?
The second one, the 4-mile applicant, lives in Rollinsville, and so we talked about the need for doing some shift work as well as the issue with you show up, you're 10 minutes in, and you never make the first truck.
Right.
Gala, I'm going to speak to one thing, and this is the only soapbox piece I'm going to have with this group. The membership board in here has a list of reserve members. Pat Richardson's name is at the top of the list, and Kate Durr's name tag is specifically gone. Rutland, you're still there. Beth Davis, you're still there. Ray, you're still there. But your point of y'all are fucked up. So the animosity to me and my family, I'm kind of done with. So under my shift captains, the attitude that it's okay to take a reserve member's name tag off the board occurred. I don't know who did it. I don't know why it happened. But what I know is it's the only missing name there. Moving on. Inspections. Rick has come up with taking...
I'm sorry. So that seems odd to me. Is there like a criteria to be a reserve member? Like, are there minimum requirements to be a reserve member?
There is not currently a minimum So typically active members that fall into non-activity get moved to reserve status. We keep them on the roster so that workers' comp will pay for them if they show up on a call. I know who is attended, how many calls Kate put in, how many calls Bretland put in, how many calls Beth and Charlie and Mike Smith and Patrick Richardson put in over the course of the year, and who our reserve members are and what they give. And the answer is that we allow them to participate because they generally contribute more than they cost.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But
I think Patrick resigned.
He did. But somebody thought it well enough to move his name to the top of the list. So anyhow, inspections. There was a discussion about how quickly we're moving forward with fire code adoption at the town level and whether we were going to wait for the CPAW process to implement fire code changes, because then we might have to come back and do some things different. Mm-hmm. Rick went out to the county IFC 2018 amendments at the county level, which primarily has to do with ignition-resistant construction, but also gravel under decks, no wooden decks, etc. And he has taken those amendments and submitted those to town and Safe Build for review. And I met with the town administrator, and we're progressing forth with code changes within the town.
Who submitted those?
Henriksen.
Okay.
And he's also sitting, and so Lyons is moving towards adoption of the 15 code. Rick sits on the board that helps approve that at the county level. I don't know why they're doing 15. But point is that I'm working with town administration. They sent an email that they're reviewing the specific codes today, and that this could occur prior to, so the town trustees change in April. It is unclear if the codes are going to be pushed forward before they seat a new board or if it's going to occur after.
And so they would adapt the IFC 2018, including our suggested amendments.
Ironically, most of the code changes are in the residential code, right, not the fire code. So that would reinstitute sprinklers and single family and townhomes, ignition resistant construction, and various other things.
This is all within town limits.
Correct. And town then would match county. So in the event of a paradise type fire event.
Has there been any pushback from town at all? Or they are on board with?
Town staff is actively, I think they're on board. What will be interesting is what the politicians think. And so CPAW is scheduled for a site visit on May 19 and 20. And part of that is going to be a capacity building workshop to get the new trustees up to speed on wildfire related issues and how town code affects that. And so it may be that we have to sell the fire code updates during that May 19, 20 period, just depending on town process. And I don't have vision on how that works. The town board voted to approve the DDA agreement for revenue offset, and that's going to be $22,797. It's unclear if the DDA then has to also vote it because the town board approved it, or if they just cut the check. The current MOU that they have has a due date of March 31st, but I believe that's coming forward. And so we renegotiated that contract and so that's we had to order a new firewall for the fire station. That's $1,000. Dan is working my IT issues. We continue to have issues with Windows Update on the PCs. I start every day with a blue screen. We have Avenza mapping updates that are due on all of our tablet devices. So he's troubleshooting a bunch of that. As far as radios, the good news is we haven't done any of the major updates. Gilpin County just came out with all of their 800 stuff. Sugarloaf just put up a repeater. Allen's Park just put up a repeater. And so we have significant programming issues across the board for all of the radios. But it feels like we're starting to get all of it congealed into where we know all of the stuff that needs to get added for the 2020 cycle.
Can I just ask a quick question? The repeaters that they've put up, are they 800s or VHFs or duals? Do you not know?
So, I don't, Ian, the piece I don't understand is how Gilpin is doing all these 800 talk groups. I didn't know they had 800 infrastructure. Mm. So I don't know where that piece sits.
I was surprised at all. I looked at the issue.
Sugarloaf has got a VHF. However, the guy that's doing their work is talking about doing a digital, some form of repeated system throughout their district, which might be a future enhancement. And then Allen's Park, same story. They're doing a straight VHF analog and apparently a digital VHF.
Ryan?
So this was part of, I asked Chief Andre this when I got him on the phone. So they are getting a 800 talk group, one of those similar we have, and they got approval for that, which is probably what you got. But they're keeping their VHF repeater system since they already have the instruction or the infrastructure up. Infrastructure there, because I had the same question asking if they were going to 800, and also they don't know how they're doing their paging system, so their paging system is probably still going to exist in some form of VHF. So if I could figure out how they're doing it.
Big Springs egress, I continue to every couple of weeks swap an email with a couple of other residents. And so I still haven't had a chance to sit down with them and do the Google Earth flyover of the various options. But I did again meet with town administration, and they're applying for an extension on the grant that will pay for the engineering company to evaluate the egress route because we can't get it done by April because of snow on the ground.
Yep.
So that's all coming along. Ambulance licensing, we got 5621. The mechanical inspection done. Our local mechanic has been booked out, and so we're still pending on the other two mechanical inspections. We're going to go through the multi-county licensing process, which is a lot more difficult. We have to get some notarized forms from our physician advisor. We have to take the ambulances physically down there, but we're working through all that, but it's a little bit harder. As far as capital projects, and I talked to you guys a little bit about what we had in capital reserve. City of Boulder has a number of trucks that they're surplusing. We've had some pretty robust discussions internally. But their procedure has significantly changed. And so in the past, a lot of times we spent $4,999 for a truck. The 2011 Ford F-350 dually utility bed with 53,000 miles, lightly used, looked like something that was going to be a really good option for us. And I'll tell you about the potential projects.
At the $5,000 level.
At $5,000, it was a great idea. It blew books at $23,000. And the new procedure is that we can make a bid that they will take to the department head. And in this case, it's the transportation department that owes us no favors. And so then, based on whatever we bid, so let's say we bid 10 or 12 on a $23,000 truck, they have to decide if it is worth going to auction and potentially earning less.
Yeah.
So the other thing that they have is 2006 Dodge 4500. It's a four-door chassis, and it was a plow truck and has a sander on the back of it that is literally rotting off. However, miles were relatively low. Charlie, do you remember 72,000?
They told me around 100, but they didn't know, he didn't have a key.
72 or 92. I talked to the guy, and a lot of those positions have changed, and he said it probably looks worse than it actually is, but my understanding is they rebuilt the front end on it. But what this brings up is the discussion, and again, as part of the, when we did the new brush truck, state required us to do a capital improvement plan, and that part of that was the vehicle replacement plan. And so we continue to look at the older apparatus in our fleet, specifically that is 5623, the rescue truck, that's a 1992, low miles, but it's still a manual shift, and we have lost that skill set within the department. So maybe 50% of the time we can't roll it because we don't have a driver skilled at driving that. In addition, the generator's failed on it, the body needs repaint, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's been my goal to re-chassis that, although we've had some robust discussions on whether we need it in the fleet. And
how often is it being used?
Well, let's talk about why it's being used first.
Sure. I think we know the answer for that.
So, it does get rolled. It's my third out for backcountry rescue. Mm-hmm. And we've used that to deliver the ATV. It carries our backup extrication equipment. And it carries our technical rescue basket, wheel, boat, and boat motor. And so the answer is it does get used, and then we use it for traffic control and extra crew going to car wrecks, etc. But I think its time has passed. However, if we were to acquire the City of Boulder F-350 non-crew cab, it's an extended cab, Charlie and I had the discussion of do we remount the existing 23 box? Do we keep the 9-foot tool body on the back of it and still use it to transport ATV? Or do we remount the rescue box that's on the old rescue truck that Timberline Fire gave us? And conceivably, we could have achieved a remount at $15,000, and I thought that was pretty reasonable.
How much is the truck worth on the market if we would eliminate it?
Well, it gets even more complex because it was bought with State of Colorado grant funds at 50%, and so we might have to actually give it back to the state or split any proceeds with them. And so the answer is, what is a 1992 Ford truck with 15,000 miles worth? And the answer is, I got no idea. Not much. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's a great truck, but it's not going to produce much return on value.
And in addition to that, you think we have to split that with the state because it was a grant match?
Correct. So, kind of what spurred this thought is that we're expecting our battery-powered extrication equipment. We're expecting to remove the hydraulic-powered extrication equipment. I'm not willing to just give it up and throw it away. We had a car wreck a couple, 3 weeks ago, and the cars were over 100 yards apart, high mechanism wreck, and they fortunately weren't that seriously injured, but we could have potentially needed two sets of extrication gear.
So what you're asking, where are we going with that, is it worth $15,000 what we think it may cost to get that F-350? Is it worth that $15,000 or $10,000 to re-chassis 23?
Stand by. It's not even that simple. So we had the opportunity to take 23 into the or 24 in, unload all the stuff, including extrication gear, and reload it. And so what we know is that we're going to make a change with the hydraulic extrication tool package that may or may not free up some space. Charlie very much likes the 2011 F-350 and very much dislikes the idea of us having a truck sitting outside that rarely gets used. Is that fair?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say I disagree with him. And so prior to us having the plow truck, we didn't have a work truck to do much of the utility functions, and we now have that. But I think 23's time has come to pass. And I think my intent is to decommission it, and what that leaves me with is a need to move the boat somewhere that we can use at first response.
Rick, the basket and wheel were also...
So then concurrently, we're talking about adding a safari rack, for lack of better terminology, on our backcountry ambulance and moving the basket and the wheel and some of that rescue stuff, beanbag, on 20, and it becomes a specialized backcountry rescue truck.
And so when you say decommission, you're going to salvage everything that you can up for 23
and get rid of it,
throw the rest of it away?
Largely, and for anything that isn't on an initial first response, so we carry sump pumps in that for draining basements and various things. Those can all go in boxes on shelves, and remember that this all predated the addition of Command 2, or we can throw that stuff in a box and throw it in the back of command too. So I think the direction is that we're going to get rid of 23 and not re-chassis it. There could be a discussion of, is the city brush truck worth replacing our old plow truck? It already has a plow mount on it. It has way better ground clearance. It's a way better truck. But unfortunately, the tool body is about a foot longer than I want.
Wait, this is not a... This is a 2006 Dodge that we're talking
about?
No,
we're not on the Dodge yet. Right. We're still back on the 11-350.
On the 11-350, all right.
So just open discussion here. And I'm taking input from everybody. So we still have some opportunity looking at that truck. But then going back to the 2006 Dodge, Charlie and I kind of brainstormed what is our next goal on the capital improvement project. And there is still an underlying desire for a dispatchable wildland fire truck. And the SCAT truck that's at Station 3 is a 1995. It's on a Chevy chassis. It, too, has incredibly low miles, is infrequently used, but is in service today. And that is probably our next piece of apparatus to get replaced. And if we were to replace it, it might make sense to remount that tool body and pump package on a four-door truck and call it a dispatch truck. And so Charlie and I are going to continue to have some robust discussions on whether this 2006 meets the bill.
Wait, what's an 06?
The 4500 Dodge.
Well, no, it's nearer than that. It's got to be nearer than 2010.
No, that's the Ford. I'm talking the Dodge. It's an 06 or 08. Okay. So we got to figure out if that thing is beat or not beat. But what's nice is it's an older chassis, and so it's actually got the shorter wheelbase.
My only concern with part of that plan is that Command 2 periodically leaves the district. Certain people go to classes. Or
I don't disagree.
And so if we functionally say we're going to put the boat or the boat motor on that or whatever we're going to put on that, we're limiting using that vehicle for that intent purpose.
We still have... I don't think the boat or boat motor go in Command 2. Okay, so the intent is to get the boat on 24, one way or another.
I'm not saying that's incorrect. I'm just saying, like, taking anything off a first response vehicle and putting it on Command 2, I think, is troublesome.
I agree. So I don't think anything permanently gets affixed there, but what I do think is if it's on the rack over by Bill's office and we can grab it and throw it either in the plow truck or Command 2 or whatever's here,
sure. That
eliminates an infrequently manual shift vehicle that we're maintaining and not using very effective.
So when do we need to decide if we want to make a bid for this 2011 Ford?
I'll let you know. But I'm just letting you know that we're having the discussion on capital improvement.
Okay.
I thought we were also looking for something for the inspector.
So we are. And City of Boulder Fire has nothing now. Middle of the year, Open Space has some pickup trucks coming up. And as much as I would prefer, I don't necessarily want that to be a pickup truck, but if that's all I can get, and I can get it reasonable with a radio and a light package, I'll let you know. And I'm still waiting for contact from Boulder County Sheriff's Department. So the guy in charge of Boulder County surplus vehicles has changed, and Dave Booten's getting me that contact. So I'm still working on the inspector vehicle replacement, and we're going to talk about that more in depth here in a minute.
Isn't Rick Hendrickson an avid bicycler?
Yes. Charlie, also sitting at the City of Boulder, is a 2010 or 11 RMK 800. Engine has been rebuilt once. Trade-in value is $3,000 to $3,500. New is $12,000. And you're going to have to provide me advice on whether that's worth replacing one of our snowmobiles with, and I'll talk to the board. But our existing two snowmobiles are from 1980, and they're...
That's what's in my yard.
prepared for invest. So just letting you know, we're having a lot of talk about capital projects,
right,
being responsible, trying to accomplish replacing our older equipment, and soliciting input on all of it. Okay. Moving on to one of the biggest concerns.
So at next board meeting, we'll make that decision, or we'll have finalized that conversation?
So money is currently line item within the capital improvement grant match thing. If I have to, I may ask for that prior to the meeting, but I don't have anything hot that I've got to move on right now.
Okay.
I heard about the vehicle check stuff loud and clear, and I'm making some pretty strong steps, I think, on that. So we changed how we're processing electronic files and paper files, and so there's a new file cabinet over there. That was all happening kind of when this all rose to a head, and in the top of that are individual truck file folders. In that will go the inspections. In that will go by vehicle each of the individual work orders. And so the work orders were being kept chronologically, but you couldn't say, I want to see all the work orders on 5621 very easily. The receipts and work done on various apparatus were going into our bill payment system files, but not being duplicated in our truck service files. And so that's now occurring.
Who's in charge of vehicle inspections?
Bill and Charlie. And
I thought Charlie was in charge of training too.
I told you I didn't specifically assign training. Work orders are now in a binder on top of the file drawer, so one of the black holes is that you would submit a work order and then nobody knew how it got resolved. And so those are now tracked, and that will be updated weekly. And so you can go in and see what's closed, what's still open, and then on a weekly basis, and this is probably at the end of Monday because we get a bunch of stuff generated over the weekend. So Bill will enter all that stuff, and then he's going to forward the existing work order log to all the shift officers and myself.
Okay. All right. Does that include like vehicle out, vehicle in inspections?
Stand by. There was voiced a lot of concern about what was stated to being checked wasn't physically being checked. And so the mechanic responsibilities are under review. We're working on terminology on what, quote, a daily, a weekly, a monthly mean, what the expectations of Bill is versus expectations of shift officers, volunteer officers, and additional staff. I haven't published the repair order escalation process, but that is upcoming, and that's going to be based on the severity of what's broke, et cetera. And long story short is, some of it's going to go to Charlie, but on his 4-day off, it's going to need to come to me, and it currently does. But Charlie's going to help share that workload with me and a little bit of his technical oversight. Bill is working on splitting out the vehicle versus equipment checks, and he currently has that on a single thing that he's calling a monthly. And some of that is probably getting done properly, and maybe some of it isn't, I don't know, but he has all of that on his computer, and we're splitting that out with the anticipation that we will be doing a monthly vehicle check by staff and monthly equipment checks by volunteers assigned on a battalion system. There will likely be a rotation where you're going to get assigned either EMS and rescue, wildland fire, or structure fire, and we're going to rotate who's looking at those on a quarterly basis so that you don't just pencil whip it. And so we'll have a schedule for that. I expect to roll that out by April 1st. I talked to the emergency vehicle technician at City of Boulder, and he recently revamped the city vehicle inspection program. And so he has a class that he offers the engineers on how to do a proper monthly inspection, and it is patterned after Boston Fire, and I've got a copy of their thing. And it's going to require a shift officers to put on coveralls and crawl under trucks and look at stuff on a monthly basis.
I'm sorry, what does Bill do then?
Huh?
What does Bill do then? Isn't he being paid to be the mechanic? Why isn't he doing those checks?
Because my shift officers are calling themselves engineers.
Okay.
And so within the fire service community, there's an expectation that driver operators and engineers do a certain level of truck checks. Bill will be doing the routine daily starting, checking lights, processing repair orders, and all of the incidental minor bullshit maintenance stuff. But monthly, so there is a feeling that there's this dramatic unstate of readiness of the vehicles. I don't know whether it's true or not, but what I can tell you is the way I can confirm it is by have redundancy and additional checks that these guys are trained to do it properly, and then they can either confirm the shit isn't getting done or it's been getting done, but whatever it is, we're going to make sure it gets done.
Sounds like an excellent start.
Okay.
Is this going to work, Charlie?
I don't know.
But I can tell you, in fairness, I'm trying not to crap on him and dump a bunch of extra work. I need his expertise, but we all got to share the workload. Mm-hmm. And so that harder question becomes, do we assign specific vehicle checks, not equipment checks, but vehicle checks to volunteer officers, people that are calling themselves engineers? And so I will open that class to them. But there is an inherent risk of some of that not getting done.
And Henry, the big thing is, I think, the volume.
So I'm sure you guys prioritizing the vehicles that are being used the most, like make sure they're getting checked probably.
To a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as Rick likes to say, other duties as assigned, so I don't know what I'm walking into each day, and when I do, I think I know what I'm walking into each day. I don't know what I'm walking into. So I think there's part of that, but the big, you know, we have a tremendous amount of vehicles here with a huge age, you know, and I've said this to other people, and Ryan may agree or disagree, but I am nervous to use a vehicle in a training because I think it's going to come back broken. Mm-hmm. And sadly, that's what happened on Saturday because Rick came in at 5 o'clock and, you know, killed it and fixed the truck. But, I mean, our trucks are old and they all need something all the time.
But Charlie, in fairness, so going back, so lots of trucks, and you're right, you walk in and you turn left, right, and you never get to whatever you thought was first on your list. So my expectation is going to be vehicle checks by shift officers on their Saturday, Sunday. That's going to occur on the weekday when I'm probably not here to divert your attention. The problem becomes when we have something like Frozen Dead Guy Days and you're booked all weekend. What do we do with the vehicle check that's supposed to occur then? Now the answer is, there's a bunch of people that are going to be here at the station committing to do standby. So maybe they're doing their truck checks then and serving the event. I don't know. So I want to make it flexible enough, but I need additional eyes on it.
I don't disagree, and I don't think, you know, I absolutely agree that we need to do something totally different. But like you said, you know, what happens this weekend? So we have, I mean, I don't know what the number is. Let's say 20 vehicles that really need to be checked. 22? I don't know. Let's say 20. I mean, you're talking about 5 vehicles by one person for a weekend.
I didn't say by one person.
You realize that Bill yelled at people for doing truck checks.
Okay.
Actually yelled at them to the point where they were scared to touch a truck.
Okay. Right.
And so that's...
That will all be remedied. Okay. So again, I'm not looking to work you to death. I realize that every shift officer's plate is full. And my concern is for you to go through the Boulder EVT training to check the heavy apparatus. And the reality is that the trucks at 2 and 3 don't move for a month. And yes, shit can go bad while they're sitting there, but that level of rigorous inspection. So however we got to schedule the most heavily used trucks are getting inspected the most regularly, I don't care what the schedule is as long as it works. You got a better suggestion to me, let me know. The goal for Baumgartner, just so we're all clear, okay, is Monday he rolls in, he starts all the vehicles, checks the fuel, checks the water, checks the lights, checks the tires on our four busiest trucks at station one, whatever that is. Okay. Station two, Tuesday, has always been in place, and he goes to station two on Tuesday. Wednesday, he catches more trucks at station one. Station three, Thursday, as it's been, he goes to station three, and station Friday, he's catching ATVs and command cars and whatever's left.
I have concerns, as a lot of people do, with his ability to check stuff.
So
we can use this week for an example with, you told me that the tires on 01 were screwed up, the inside one was flat, and in the same week we have a bad tire on 24.
Not true. But anyhow, but I won't disagree. So I'm going to get to tire pressure monitoring system here in a minute. But again, additional eyes, you guys are going to have to share the burden. Short version. So, we're working on vehicle checks. There was a discussion that we're not doing annual inspections. And so part of this Boston thing is that engineers go through the trucks, and then at some point the EBT goes through the truck. And so our goal is to replicate that. So our local mechanic does the inspection for the U.S. Forest Service and has given us the checklist that he uses for brush trucks. So all brush trucks will get inspected by the local dude. All of the ambulances that are part of the multi-jurisdictional licensing process are going to be inspected by the local dude and us, unless we have to ship them out. And any of the heavy trucks on a rotational basis are going to go down to City of Boulder Fleet Maintenance and get inspected. And so we will have annual inspections on every single truck that we own. And some of that has been occurring. The trucks that we get from Forest Service, they've already been inspecting them on an annual basis.
Can I just quick go back to the vehicle vehicle checks? I think it's important to try something out what we think is probably the best we can do right now. I want to make sure it's documented right. I want to make sure there's an accountability system in place so that we, at some point on the board level, can look at that and go like, yeah, this works, or no, this sucks, we need to change it. So probably looking at you and Charlie, who are in charge of that, to sort of create that.
So what we're going to look at is compliance standards and what the percentage of successfully completed equipment checks is by whoever's supposed to be doing that.
And then if we find out that whatever we're thinking of now is not going to work, we can adopt, right?
Yeah. All right.
Do we have a idea what a truck would look like? Is there any type of paperwork out in that yet?
We have 10 versions, mm-hmm. and we have the one that Bill's been using for 5 years, although some people say not effectively.
Okay.
I have the Boston one here.
But we don't actually have one that people are using yet that you could show us.
I'd have to go. Yes, I can go grab you one right now.
Okay.
Do you need me to do that, or can we?
Not right now, but I would like to see it.
Okay. So going on to specific vehicles.
Why do you have the coronavirus?
I do have that. Yeah.
Can I just ask one question?
I moved a little bit further away.
As this is being pushed to you, how long would you say it would take to do a vehicle inspection on, say, like 01 versus 21?
A real
inspection? Can we move closer to the phone or wiggle it or something because it keeps cutting out?
Sorry, Beth, I was facing away from you. My question was really just a like time scale for how long it takes to do
like a crawl under inspection?
I would think by the time you do pump testing and everything along those lines, like 3 hours, wouldn't you think then?
Oh, true.
Like,
I think it's 2 to 3. For a frontline fire apparatus.
What's a reasonable truck check for a volunteer that would be done weekly?
How long would that take?
Should be the same.
Should be the same.
When you start to differentiate, and that's when things get.
But it's not. It's not. So checking new 31, I think, is dramatically different than checking a structure engine or a heavy truck.
That's true.
So brush trucks look very different. Ambulances are very different. Our structure engines are a shit ton of work.
What I just heard you say that Bill does on Monday to me sounds like something volunteers should be doing. And that has been kind of a pet peeve for me for a while. But
so again, we have two schools of thought. So we're going to take the truck check burden off of volunteers so that we're not exhausting them checking things so that they then are rested to show up for calls and trainings. Then we did all that, and Bill pulled it all in, and we took sense of ownership away. And so then, what's it been, Charlie? When did we last have everybody's truck and name up here? 2 years, 3 years? Then we went through a period of time that lasted for 3 or 4 months that people were good at checking trucks, and I had one person that checked the engine at Station 2 regularly for a year. And we put out the $250 Best Check Truck Award. But I think, so the goal today is to have volunteers doing equipment checks, making sure the fittings are clean, the saw's chain is tight, it's sharp, and the things, and have them checking things. But I don't honestly know that it's a great use of volunteer time to be checking the dipstick on anything. I do have a mechanic that does that. So there's got to be an evenness in this workload. And there are some things, you're right, can Bill physically, he tells me that he looks at the radiator set glass. I jumped his ass. I said, I haven't seen the cab lifted on engine one in forever. And he's like, yeah, I lift the thing inside and look at the levels. I never knew that. So maybe it is occurring. So I'll give you that list. So moving on to specific trucks. 5601, that structure fire that we had. They drove the truck back and the brake system, quote, caught fire.
Joe said, we got fire! We got fire!
So I inspected the brake system and didn't find any problem with the pads or the rotors or the air system that supplies it. I then nonetheless took it to the city of Boulder and had them look at it. Charlie and I installed, so the potential here is that for some reason the brakes stayed on or were never released. And this is the second time it's occurred on 01. And the issue is that you can overpower the brake system just by stepping on the gas. And so is that a training issue, driver familiarity issue, or did we have some kind of weird mechanical failure because I was unable to duplicate it the second day when it came back? So Charlie installed an amber light, which other fire departments have, that indicates the parking brake is not released. And so irrespective if it's a driver error, there's going to be a bright orange light here that says the brake system didn't go off. Or the only other potential scenario I came up with is that there was condensate in the air tank. They drove it from inside a warm facility. They parked it on the road for less than an hour. However, the condensate froze in the line and prevented it from taking the brakes off. I can't prove it. It's the only theory we can come up with. Okay. But nonetheless, if that occurred, the amber light will tell you the system didn't drain. I took it to the EVT. There's no damage to the brakes. There's no damage to the rotors. He said your inner tire was low or flat rubbing on the instants, and he thought that's what was generating a bunch of the issue. But we can't find a problem with the brakes. So I don't know if this was a driver issue or, again, this potential condensate thing, but we believe we have an issue there. I'm pretty frustrated with the inner dual thing, and I spent a lot of time I've talked to at least four different fire departments, three different service facilities on what do you do to monitor inner dually tire pressure. And so the tire pressure monitoring system, TPMS, there's the crappy version where you screw a thing on the valve stem and it blinks red when it gets down to 5 or 10 PSI. Well, that's way too low. That's too late to tell me. Some of those are so hard to check that if you just use an air gauge on them, you bleed out a handful of PSI every time you do it. I think you create a problem, not remedy a problem. And then for $275, I can get a 6-sensor TPMS system that reports up to a display in the cab. According to Timberline Fire, if you pull the sensor off to put air in the tire, you have to re-serialize the sensor with the in-cab display, otherwise it's just blank. And he says they have ignored it for years and they're worthless. And that was a conversation at 5 o'clock today. So nobody has the right answer. They believe technology is coming forward, but I can tell you I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to make sure that our inner dualies aren't low on air. And we're gonna throw some money at it one way or another. Because that's got to be something that we're looking at roughly daily. You know, of the limited things, what does Bill do? That would be something reasonable for him to do on every truck at Station 1 on Monday. So I'm looking at TPMS. I know that, quote, Frito-Lay, our tire distributor, they are testing a new system right now, but there's no great system as it stands. So City of Boulder is also working on an intermittent Telma retarder at position 2 and 3. We bought a new handle. They're going to put it in, and I'm probably going to go down there again tomorrow and troubleshoot it with them. Ironically, Engine 1, as far as we know, and Ray, you might know better, but we don't believe the brake system was ever interfaced to the Telma retarder on Engine 1. On Engine 2, it absolutely is interfaced to the retarder. You take your foot off the gas, and it starts slowing down with the help of the retarder.
Did you say Engine 2?
Well, 2 does.
I thought Engine 2 had a retarder.
Or is that 17?
It has an Engine 17. No, it has the...
Yeah, not a Telma, a retarder.
The 17 does.
17
right.
Has the brake reserve.
But
Engine 1
is just
it's
lever.
A hydraulic one on...
We have 3 vehicles with Telmas.
Yeah, it's a whole different system than what Engine 2 was.
But I think that 01 was never interfaced with the brake system.
Not that I've ever seen.
And so we may be looking at a retrofit on that, just so you know. All right. And then lastly, on 5601, the discharge pressure...
Do you still have contact with Hans?
Yes.
Ask him.
Okay. Discharge pressure relief, we've been stumbling around on that thing for half a year, and City of Boulder's going to help us troubleshoot that. In addition, while it's there, they're getting the annual DOT done. So that's there. 5602, as Charlie alluded to, they took it out in 5601's absence, trained with it, and all of a sudden it was blowing water out of the side of the tank. I came in Saturday night and got that fixed. Charlie, I will agree and disagree with you that our trucks are aged, but if you remember Timberline and all the issues they had with their brand new Rosenbauers, I would say we're on equal footing. So, 5624. So that got written up for the 30-mile-an-hour shimmy, which was reported to occur at 20. And so when we transferred from the manual transmission to the automatic transmission, climbing the hill at Barker at 30 miles an hour, it shudders and feels like a paint can shaker. And if you back your foot off the gas, it goes away. But per the report, it didn't go away.
It did from the whole way from Boulder Falls up to between
which truck?
The upper passing.
24.
Mm-hmm. You know, so notable oscillation.
So I took that when we did the transmission shop back to Stewart and Stevenson, and they sat on it for a month, rechecked drive lines, they couldn't find anything. So long story short, it took me forever to find somewhere else, and I sent it to Mile High Truck Transmission, who specializes in driveline measurement and alignment and computer modeling. And they checked the driveline. They shimmed the transfer case, which was 21 thousandths out, down to 6 one-thousandths. But they don't believe that that was the problem. But they drove it 50 miles up and down every hill in Arvada, and they couldn't duplicate the problem. We then took it, and so that was $880. And then I took it to GCS, and I got six new tires for $3,800. So we have six new tires on the truck, and driving it back up at Boulder Falls at 30 miles an hour, it rattled for 5 to 6 seconds. And so problem isn't gone. I have nowhere else to take it, but if you take your foot off the gas and then gently put your foot back on the throttle.
So wait, it only rattles for 5 to 6 seconds?
Ryan said that it rattled all the way up from Boulder Falls. I didn't get it to do that.
Everybody's had the problem. It's not just Ryan. I mean, I can definitely attest to that.
But it's a 30 mile an hour on grade loaded.
Absolutely. I mean, it's legit shaking. I mean,
yeah.
How about?
Yeah. But I mean, it's like stuff in the back falling off.
But I have nowhere else to throw money at it, nor a shop that wants to see it. So that's that. We reloaded it, put water in it. We actually haven't driven it since we got it back to confirm the shake is there, but I suspect it is.
Well, the tires, they were replaced because they were old or because you thought they may be reason for the shake?
So during the Cold Springs fire, they replaced our inner dually tire with something that didn't match the rest, and just trying to troubleshoot this. So we got six new tires. And they're nice. And it rides really smooth on the highway, I can tell you that. I mean, no, it's noticeably... I was actually optimistic driving it back and crushed coming up the hill. So, all right, moving on. 5621, got the glow plug relay wiring harness replaced. The annual inspection was done. And somehow, magically, the shift lever, the end of it, was found broken off, and that has been replaced. 5653, which is the Inspectomobile, and the old 5631 got new windshields, and promptly after replacing the windshields, the Inspector Mobile now has a low oil pressure problem. Charlie replaced the oil pressure sensor, he tightened the filter, and we have a replacement filter to put on. And if that doesn't correct the problem, then it could be the oil pump. That's a rebuilt engine in there, I believe.
Yeah, about 40,000 miles ago.
And I hate the idea of throwing more money at this thing, but I don't have a replacement. Shift scheduling. Alex rolled out the Pulaski shift scheduling software, and thank you for doing that. And I'm vaguely aware of how many people are signing up. You want to speak to it at all?
So we have three slots available for each night. I think that's the capacity that we would like to be able to achieve at some point. That's what the shift officer just said they would like. Three volunteers showing up to basically every shift or to any call. This week we have one volunteer for each night. So I think on some of them, maybe two nights this week, we have two volunteers. The first night we rolled it out, we had three, so you know that was pretty good. Next week,
I thought we only had two. Can you move closer
to the phone, please?
You and Jamie.
The
Ian, can you point that it out?
Yeah, thanks. So is the idea that you're here or that you're sitting at home and I'm responsible.
We know for sure you're going to show up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that like something? What time frame on that? Please.
So that was that's come up in question as well. Sorry.
Right.
So my thought is to do 9 to 7 because I think everybody is home by 9,
And most people are getting ready or unavailable after 7 in the morning.
Okay.
And that hasn't been finalized, but that was my
thought.
Yeah, so and we're also calling this a soft rollout, meaning that you know, the plan for this first month is to really just get people signed up, exercise the system, get people used to, you know, doing something different. So we won't really even expect full compliance until the end of this month. So, yeah, we have, what, 4 people signed up for next week and then 3 for the following week. So I'm, you know, constantly sending out emails to members. We've had, I think, so I've sent out, I think there were 22 people on the roster. So on the email list, expected to sign up. I think half have logged in already. I've contacted the other half, you know, really just trying to figure out what the issues are. But it's, you know, I just rolled it out on Saturday, just this last Saturday. So, you know, it takes a few days for people to check email. Not everyone is on email all the time, like I am. So, you know, it's just, yeah, there's going to be a ramp up process.
Same process for the weekends, or is that a different, whole different?
So right now, there is no distinction between weekends and weekdays. I just suggested something in our Slack channel. So we started up a Slack channel as well, which I think is a great way for just members to communicate with each other. And one thing about this app is that alerts are going to go out both via email and to Slack. So there are 2 ways for people to get information about, you know, essentially when things go wrong. If nobody signed up for a night shift, that'll go out via email and also via Slack. So, and Slack is kind of nice because you also get alerts on your phone, and you know, almost everyone has smartphones on them all the time. So it's, you know.
So how much? So would you say we reach 100% of the membership with that approach?
So I think if we reach 50% of the membership, like if we hit 50% compliance, I believe that we can consistently guarantee no more status 1 calls. So we want at least 1 volunteer to show up, and we can do that with just 50% compliance.
Wait, so reaching 50% of the membership, or 50% of the membership responding to it?
If 50% of the members, sign up for 4 night shifts per month,
right,
which I think is fairly reasonable, then you know we can cover all nights.
Okay.
So I think we need. So a couple things I think we need is buy-in from everyone in this room, essentially, pushing this down. And the other thing is, you know, I know that you got some pushback from at least 1 volunteer basically saying they were offended by it, that we didn't talk to him about it. So I think we need to figure something out, you know, what the parameters are of this.
Yeah.
Before we really can, you know, consider it.
So I do think that would definitely help if we want to achieve 100% compliance. And if we want to get 100% compliance, so that we have 3 volunteers showing up, you know, every night, or for, you know, any calls that we get at night, you know, help from you guys would definitely help. I think that'll get us there.
I mean, I just want to make sure that we don't leave members, volunteers out just because they have no means to see this.
No, because it's done by email.
Right.
Yeah.
So everybody has email. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we do live in Netherland, but I don't know any of our members that don't have email.
And I mean, it's a fair comment. If everybody gets it, then I'm fine with that. That's just normally.
Yeah, we can't rely on smartphones because I know that, like, Jim doesn't have a smartphone, and that's fine. But Jim definitely has email. But I think we definitely need buy-in, and we need to figure
what
out.
What was the pushback? What didn't someone like about it, or what was the resistance?
That it has. It was basically a change in policy that didn't come from above, essentially.
Well,
he's disgruntled about being disgruntled.
Kind of coming from above.
Changing the non-existent policy.
And again, Do you have any comments to that,
so my,
Chief?
My perspective is, you know, I feel that we can at least eliminate status one calls with a purely peer-driven system.
Yeah, right? This is fantastic.
And if we can get a full like buy-in from, you know, the department, like you guys, then I think actually with a peer-driven system, I'm confident we can get to 75% compliance as well. Getting that last quarter is going to be tough to impossible with a peer-driven system. So I think we need you guys to get us to that last quarter.
So, Charlie, you or Bretlin had a hand in there.
I had a hand up.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure how to resolve it. My kind of knee-jerk reaction is to maybe see if there's a volunteer that's willing to take this task on. But we've talked a little bit about the about this system and about the online training program that's out. And I can tell you that as a reserve member, I know nothing about this system. I didn't get an email about this. And the online training system, the only thing that I got was a notification from an unknown entity to me saying that I'd been signed up for something. I didn't get any notification from the department saying, hey, we have this great idea to help you get the training that you need. Expect an email from this, you know, this could have just gone to spam for all I knew.
Yeah.
So I think that
Putting this together so that everyone gets notified. That was not Alex's thing. I know that, but I'm saying just in general, we're at a point right now where we're trying to make some forward progress
and make this a better department, and I think that's one thing that needs to be addressed is making sure that that gets things like this that are fantastic ideas get communicated.
So I completely agree with that. And so in this, I excluded reserve members. So I just, you know, focused on the 22, you know, current members where there were, I felt that there was, you know, an expectation that they should show up to four night shifts, right? Reserve members are more, you know, so I didn't exclude, I excluded them from that original list. But I also rolled it out like that. There was an initial email, expect another email from this email address. You'll get your login credentials. There were several follow-up emails. I think people are tired of getting emails from me at this point, but I'm gonna continue to send out emails for as long. I mean, I can, you know, I can type pretty quickly. So I'm just gonna continue to flood people with emails until we reach 75% to 100% compliance. But actually, that's a good question. Is, you know, should we then in the next phase think about folding in reserve members? What's reasonable to ask of reserve members?
So, Bretlin, in answer to your question, you're spot on. And so, I have a vision for the reserve program, and that typically is going to be a 1 hour per month training requirement. So that you know about what we're doing. And that's not happened with you guys. And so when there's a new radio channel, there's a new truck, whatever the change in stuff is. So the goal is that reserves commit to an hour, whether we do that individually as a group or whatever, I don't really care. But I have a vision that we've got to do that. And so we've got a group of people that want to contribute. And straight out, I am thrilled that you're a reserve, and I appreciate when you contribute. And so I got to make it so that you feel like you can do that and that you're getting whatever you need out of us. Same story with Kate Durr and whoever else wishes to reserve for us. Right? So there's a plan for the reserve program, but to be honest, I got bigger fish to fry right now. So that's coming, and we'll figure out how to incorporate that.
Great.
Okay? Going to support from above the additional 25%. Estes has some pretty innovative things that they do to encourage participation. And I really honestly believe this is a carrot, not a stick, on getting your additional participation. and that we got to figure out a way to do that, that I think if we, you know, from above it says, you shall be required to sign up for X number of shifts per month, we are going to get pushback from somebody. And so if we can find a better way to do that other than thou shall, I really want to try and figure out how to do that. So I uploaded some of the Estes stuff. I don't know that that made it up, Ian. That might be separate, but
in
I know. But anyhow, Estes got some, they do cell phone reimbursement for volunteers. And there are tons of other departments that have other ways to incentivize volunteers. And I will tell you that, I think we have to be flexible enough that if Joey wants to cover every night, we let him. And if somebody can only do one shift a month, we let them exist also. Mm-hmm. But the optimal goal is for us to get whatever percent participation.
Yeah, and in the email that I sent out as well, so the system has, it allows for members to go in and change what they think that they can sign up for. I just started everyone off at 4 in the hopes that some people will bump up, some people can bump down. They can set it to 0 if they want. That's perfectly fine. And when I, and in that email, you know, I tried to express that it's fine if you set it to whatever you think you can do. 0 is perfectly acceptable, you know. But if it's 0, you know, I might like to follow up and ask why.
But Al, that wouldn't cost us anything to include reserves.
Yeah.
And maybe we should do that just because we get some added bonus and we pull them in as part of the solution.
We also need to figure out what we're going to ask of people who aren't in district, because now we that number is growing.
So yes. One thing I said in the email was that I assumed it was like regular shifts, that if you're out of district and you're signed up for a night shift, you should be here at the station. So
yeah, what's the desired response time to the station to be someone doing that shift?
You know, let's call it 10 minutes.
If you're in district, yeah, I mean.
Because ironically, my new volunteer from Rollinsville.
It's going to get here quicker than people live in the back of
Christ. But it might be 10 minutes, right? But whatever.
I think the baseline is you're going to turn up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it was actually kind of getting to the question of if you actually live out of district, how far is too far? I mean, it's not, I don't have the answers. It's kind of curious if you all have
As long as we know. So, I mean, like, the big thing for me and for probably Ryan and Dan, you know, the people who are first responding out.
You want to know someone showing up?
Is anybody going to know that we're dead before a shift change? Because like Dan a few weeks ago ran like a schizophrenic person at 4 a.m. in Big Springs with status 1 by himself with no PD. And so you show, and just keep, how do we know? You know, I was like, well, I walk in, I'm glad the ambulance is here. So, you know, having more than just one person showing up, because what if that one person doesn't get the alert or sleeps through it? You know, it's absolutely terrifying. Like, some of the calls that we go by yourself is absolutely terrifying.
So, Alex, you're managing the scheduling program, and then is that available to all the shift captains and the chief to see who is actually scheduled to show up?
So everyone has accounts.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, sorry. All of the 22 active members and the officers. Yeah.
But you're the one making modifications to it.
Yeah, I wrote all the code.
Okay.
No, but anyone can open it up and see who's doing. Yeah. Like, if you just click on the click on the calendar and see, oh. Yeah.
Right, but what I'm going to make sure is only one person can actually modify it, so not that 22 members go in and modify the hell out of the calendar every day, and then it's another cluster.
Right.
All right, moving on.
Where is this found?
Huh?
Where is it found?
Does it have to be invited?
On the fire department webpage?
No.
You have to be invited, and you weren't invited.
Yeah. Oh. I can make you guys accounts if you want. But yeah, so I
also met that board members the other day.
I've only been here 30 years.
Continuing with the world's longest chief's report. So SOPs. Ian and I are both working, and I'm happy with the progress that's occurring. Equally with Ian, I'm frustrated with the progress that's occurring.
Ditto.
And so we will endeavor next week to have a sit down together, certainly with you, I, and then we'll see what shift officer participation looks like. I don't know that we have to all be there, but I want to get traction on format. I want to get traction on just the organization, and I think you've done a bunch of that groundwork, but I got to give enough time to do it. So that's the part that's kind of holding us up, but there's good things happening in the background, and so Larissa is working on our BLS bag inventory. Charlie and George met and are working on a consistent inventory for our ALS equipment. We are a number of draft SOPs, SOGs have been uploaded, and so yeah, it's taken longer, and I think, you know, the hour or the day that Ian gets to work on it isn't the hour or day that I get to work on it. But we're going to hammer that out. Officers meeting is coming pretty promptly here, and so